Welcome to the Wedlock Bell Legal Podcast, covering a range of legal topics, including updates from our four practice groups: private client, real estate, business services, and dispute resolution.
Welcome to this Wedlock Bell Podcast, and thank you for listening. My name is Matt Braithwaite, and I'm a partner in the private client team. This is the first of our podcasts focusing on the disposal of family businesses. In this podcast, we will be considering the impact of the COVID-19 pandemic, the changing tax landscape, and the potential structuring options available to business-owning clients. In our second podcast on the subject, we will consider generational trends, wider succession planning considerations, and what the next phase might look like for exiting business owners. With me is Kevin O'Shea, who is an executive director and wealth planner at Julius Baer, who I'm delighted is able to join me today. Kevin's expertise in financial planning and tax-related matters allow him to identify key issues, and his industry knowledge and network provide the resources to connect clients with the right person to provide in-depth legal and tax advice. So firstly, welcome, Kevin.
Thank you, Matt. It's a pleasure to join you.
So I thought we'd go straight in and sort of consider a few questions. And the first one that I had in mind was, looking back on the last year, which indeed has been an unprecedented one, and I wonder from your perspective whether that's meant that family business sales have ground to a halt, or have they continued as a consequence?
And what a year it's been. We've seen a bit of a mixed bag with our clients and with prospects. Some business sales have been delayed or been cancelled. So those that are in the leisure and tourism industry have been hit particularly badly. Whilst other sectors, we've seen an acceleration in sales. So industries where there are consolidators present, they've been particularly active, as trying to grow the business organically has been difficult during lockdown. Technology firms have become increasingly attractive as well, and this has tempted some into exiting based on the valuations. In addition to this, we've seen some companies involved with changes to office use. So those looking at flooring, partition walls, lighting, etc. We've seen that they've got a more promising future ahead as companies are looking to change how they use workspaces and sort of how much space they use. This hasn't gone unnoticed. So these types of businesses have also come on the radar and are starting to look at potential exits. Anecdotally, the corporate finance houses that we've been speaking with have been much busier than normal as well. And how about yourself, Matt? Have you seen much change in business sales?
From our perspective, like you've said, there have been real sort of winners and losers through this whole experience. And one example of a client of mine that springs to mind is a business in the aircraft engineering sector. And up until recently, they've had a very enviable problem of being sort of sat on too much cash because the business has been incredibly profitable. And part of the exercise before the COVID pandemic was to look at restructuring the business to maximize the trading aspects for business property relief and ring fence the cash that was sat on the balance sheet, which couldn't otherwise be employed as part of the business, very much to future-proof the business with regards to taxation. But the pandemic meant that the cash that was being ring-fenced was actually then needed to be deployed into the business, very much to keep it afloat and keep it going, because the aircraft industry, as we all know, has been deeply impacted by the pandemic. So actually, that cash was repurposed for the use by the business. And of course, that investment angle that they were otherwise looking at has been put on the back burner for now. Of course, hopefully, if things return to a sense of normality in due course in the aviation industry, dare I say it takes off again, we'll see that business coming back. But in the short term, it's been very challenging. And I know from other colleagues in the team and our corporate team that they've seen real winners and losers throughout this whole experience. from your perspective, Kevin, just as a sort of a further consideration, is those who are looking at buying these businesses, are you seeing any trends there? Are there any sort of requirements for certain buyers to be deploying their cash and acquiring? I mention this because I'm also particularly interested in the subject of family offices and whether they, in fact, are also now thinking about deploying cash in different ways, and maybe that's through the acquisition of other business interests.
It is. So we're seeing the three different ways of business exits or business sales, certainly, being utilised. So private equity houses coming in to purchase businesses, IPOs affecting businesses as well. And we've seen more private equity. There's more cash on the sidelines, so they're being more aggressive. They have to deploy that cash into businesses. So we're seeing a lot more private equity purchases, and that's continued over the last year, and I think has led to a lot of the increase that our corporate finance colleagues have been seeing in these business sales and business exits. The private sales have continued as well, so individuals looking to sell their business, and I think that's been driven partly by the fact that people have had time to reflect on the business and to review their future agendas. And that's great to see as well, because people are starting discussions earlier than they might have otherwise started that discussion. And it's something we try and encourage clients to do more and more, and it's great to see. So getting that team in place as soon as possible is a huge benefit. Having a lawyer, tax advisor, getting a corporate finance house, financial advisor, asset manager, having everything in place, understanding what life will look like post-sale, it really helps you to understand what you need to achieve from that sale. And it just gives more opportunity for planning. And that opportunity for planning can be very valuable. We've seen clients who, back when it was called entrepreneurs relief, they've missed out on large tax reliefs through entrepreneurs relief due to relatively minor changes to the business. So we saw one client who, as a result of a dilution of shares, ended up losing their entrepreneurs relief and ended up with £1 million higher tax bill. Another individual ended up changing to consult for a company and lost their entrepreneurs relief. And this is where having a good tax advisor, a good lawyer in place before the sale really does help. It's they're worth their weight in gold. They can really help with that.
I knew we'd involve you for the right reason, Kevin. I'll quote you on that one. Being worth your weight in gold. That's a nice takeaway. I think you're right, though. I think that whole idea of the pandemic being an opportunity for people to take stock and really refocus on what's a priority to them. And it may well be that they see this as an opportunity to think about the future and where they see their own destiny headed and what work-life balance they want to achieve. You know, some of these business owners have been at it for, you know, years and you know, that's life. But where you have a pandemic like this, it's a real balance and check in terms of deciding whether you want that for the future. And I think starting conversations early, as we all know, particularly in the context of succession planning, is key. And I, you know, I consider the exit as you know, very much a phase of that succession planning, because you would hope that the business owner has had that discussion maybe with the next generation within their own family as to whether they see an opportunity with regards to succeeding the business. And, you know, if they don't, then the next step really is to think about that exit. And I think we've certainly seen a number of clients who have both taken a step back in their business and their personal circumstances to be able to spend more time thinking about the future and getting their own succession planning right. So I suspect we'll continue to see a real increase in interest for business owners to think about that transition to the next phase. And one of the other considerations that we can't ignore during, more particularly this year, but certainly towards the back end of last year, is around tax and the uncertainty that we've been living under for quite a number of months now. And I know from some of my private clients, this is having a bearing on their, future plans. I know from business owners as well, particularly in the context of, corporation tax changes, that tax is a key consideration. So from your perspective, Kevin, have you seen tax as an impediment to business sales, or what are you seeing in practice?
Well, tax has become quite an interesting topic of late. Previously, you wouldn't see much of it in newspapers, and now it's making the headlines. And it's not just actual tax changes that are making the headlines, it's the potential for. And I think the public are very wary that there is a large deficit being created from COVID, and this will need to be paid for somehow. And to a certain degree, the public are bracing at the prospect of any changes or potential changes. That may happen. Coming up to the budget, we did see a slight change in behaviour. There was definitely an increased number of sales, and these sales were being pushed through before the budget. We think, in our experience anyway, it wasn't people that weren't going to sell suddenly decided to sell. This is people that were looking to exit the business who then accelerated that exit to do so before the budget. And you can understand the logic that to before the budget, if there's any potential changes that are negative, and you know what the current playing field is, to try and accelerate it and to secure in those current rates. And capital gains tax rates is the big one that's been on a lot of clients' minds, and certainly leading into the budget. Matt, is this something you've seen as well from your clients, concerns around capital gains tax rates?
Yeah, the message really has been up until the budget that if you had an asset with a latent gain and you were already minded to do something about it in terms of a disposal, whether by sale or gift, was to accelerate that and think about doing it before budget day. We would never advocate sort of the sale or disposal of an asset just to lock in a tax saving, but if it was already on the agenda, then certainly encouraging clients to realize their gains rather than defer and take a hedge as to whether tax rates would change was certainly the advice we were providing. But there is that general sort of cloud of uncertainty I think that private clients are under, and as you said, never before has tax changes, primarily because they're so linked to what's going on more broadly, but been sort of played out in the wider media, and not a day or a week went past, particularly at the start of the year, where there were reports that CGT changes would be afoot, IHT would change, the introduction of a wealth tax. And because we saw this evolution of rumour, it also meant that many clients just became quite sort of reticent towards budget day, that they're thinking, well, actually, there is no clarity here. We haven't got enough to go on to actually make decisive steps. And whereas before it was always very much through the instigation of the advisor in terms of conversations around the future of taxation, a lot of people had a lot of opinions on the subject. But certainly, we can expect reform, I think, more widely of CGT and inheritance tax. In due course, it's just a case of when. I mean, a number of shortcomings with regards to capital gains tax have been highlighted through the work of the Office of Tax Simplification, of which the industry is largely supportive of. And I think one of those will be around making business disposals that much more appealing, particularly those who can't roll over potential capital gains into other business interests. And the idea of holding on to those assets until death, and when you get this rebasing, is certainly a disincentive from that idea of succession planning. But I know from our other discussions, Kevin, that you highlighted an interesting report, which would be sort of interested to a good idea to explore a bit further here, just for the benefit of listeners.
I did so. The Tax After Coronavirus report, which was released in late February, early March, was a report by the Treasury Committee. And it was a cross-party report. It looked at taxes as a whole and made some recommendations around what could be changed and what could be amended. And one of the interesting points that came out of that was during a discussion with the Chartered Institute of Taxation. They hosted a discussion with the people that were heavily involved in the report, and the Right Honourable Mel Stride, who's a Conservative MP, was talking around the different taxes and where they sit on something called the Laffer curve. Now, the Laffer curve is a very typical bell curve, and I'll try and describe it on a podcast. And up the left-hand side, we have the total tax collected, and along the bottom, we have the tax rate. And as we see the tax rate increasing, we see the total tax collected increasing. So you see that line going up until we get to a certain point. And at that point, tax avoidance and tax planning and that disincentive of such a high tax rate really have an influence on the amount of tax collected. And then we see it starting to drop off and reduce down to the other side because it influences behaviour. And one part that I found particularly interesting is that the Right Honourable Mel Stride was talking around which taxes fit onto this Laffer curve. And the three taxes he identified were stamp duty, capital gains tax, and alcohol tobacco taxes. Now, the alcohol and tobacco taxes, they're not going to change rates off because the tax rates are set for moral reasons, partly for health reasons as well. But with stamp duty and capital gains tax, they are taxes that they can amend and they can change. And we've seen them changing stamp duty recently, and we've seen the effect that's had on taxes collected, whether they decrease the tax on stamp duty and then we've seen a huge flurry of activity in that market, the potential to increase it saw the market slowing down a little bit. And it was interesting to hear that capital gains tax sits on that Laffer curve as well and is subject to that influence. It's difficult to gauge the intention of Parliament and any tax changes, as you've said, Matt, a bit of crystal ball gazing. And following the budget, they did announce there was going to be a tax day. And Matt, I'm not sure if you got as excited as I did. I felt like the Queen having two birthdays in one year. Yeah. To have a tax day and a birthday.
We got very excited and sadly crushingly disappointed as well.
It certainly was. It was quite an interesting day, and it was interesting for what it was missing rather than for what was included. Again, we found people were bracing for the worst and thinking that there was going to be some potential changes signposted. It did turn out to be largely a bit of a damn squib, but one of the big surprises for us, Matt, I'm not sure whether it caught you by surprise as well, was they announced that they're actually going to review the Office of Tax Simplification itself. So we expected reviews into taxes. We didn't expect a review into the body that suggests changes to taxes.
I think that just sums up the whole situation, though, doesn't it?
It does. But I suppose looking at the UK as a whole, and I suppose one of the things sitting in the UK, we can be quite siloed, I suppose. We've got that insular view. And one thing I've found quite interesting is those that come to the UK and they're looking at the UK and they're looking at whether it's still an attractive destination to do business and looking at clients that are relocating to the UK. Are you seeing much change in this, given the potential changes on the horizon, or are the existing tax reliefs and sort of the business environment still encouraging people to come to the UK?
I think they generally are, actually, and then we sort of have to sort of take a step back sometimes and think about the tax position that we've been used to, particularly if you think about entrepreneurs relief and its subsequent reform. And yes, we can speculate about tax changes that may be less favourable for clients in the future, but the immediate taxing landscape in the UK is generally pretty favourable for those from abroad who are looking to relocate to the UK. So in that sense, I think it's worth using that as a balance and a check. And we continue to see interest from other parts of the world, particularly at the moment from Hong Kong, individuals of all sort of walks of life, those who are also entrepreneurial and business minded, also thinking about the UK and needing to consider the taxing landscape, which comparable to other jurisdictions is actually still pretty favourable.
And with that sort of tax and structuring landscape, I know that you see quite a lot of business exits, and you help, you've got a lot of experience and you've helped a lot of clients through that. Just wondering, can we get a bit of a freebie for the podcast listeners here? So what structuring steps do you see people typically taking when they're looking to exit the business?
Well, I think it goes back to that idea of, well, there's two issues really. There's the idea of timing, and for how far along that succession planning you are and what conversations you've had. And the other is about what you're used to. And I'll touch on that a bit separately. So when I say in terms of timing, an obvious planning opportunity if you're looking at a succession plan is to think about the use of a trust. Maybe you're thinking of planning for the next generation and you're not wanting to necessarily give over absolute control to that generation or even that generation's next generation, as it were. So you want to use a trust really to safeguard and provide a degree of asset protection. For business owners, there's a real opportunity, provided you meet the requisite conditions, to actually be able to settle your business interests in a trust without crucially triggering an inheritance tax charge, which is quite rare in the current taxing landscape in the UK to avoid an inheritance tax charge on the transfer of assets into a trust. And the key there is that you don't have a binding contract for sale over the business interest. So again, it goes back to that idea of timing. If you can plan ahead before you agree a sale, then there's a real opportunity. And likewise, from a capital gains tax perspective, you would hold over the gain, so you wouldn't necessarily realise the gain immediately on the transfer of those business assets into the trust. So that's quite an appealing prospect for many business owners. That said, there is another school of thought where you have a business owner who's quite used to a corporate setting. They may want to use a corporate to replicate the attributes of a trust. And we see that through the creation of family investment companies. So your business owner might set up their own sort of family company with which family members are the shareholders, and they can be the directors. So they hold that sort of quasi trustee role, and the shareholders are almost the quasi beneficiaries, and you have the ability to control income flows to those beneficiaries through different share classes. And that might be your only option as well with regards to structuring. If you think about structuring later in the day, maybe you've already sold the business, or you've already got this binding contract for sale that negates the inheritance tax advantages of settling those assets into trust. But also there may well be advantages from a capital gains tax perspective by settling those interests into a family investment company, because you would get the incorporation relief and not pay a capital gains tax charge up front on the transfer of those assets into the family investment company. So again, typical lawyer response. It very much depends on the individual client and their requirements, both from a personal perspective and a wider family perspective, and also a business perspective. So that's sort of my fudge on some advice for the listener. But also, you can take it one step further and maybe have some sort of hybrid structure. So you create your family investment company, and maybe one of your shareholders of that investment company could well be a trust for the benefit of children or grandchildren. So yeah, there's certainly some options out there. And the other one, which we thought would be useful to cover, was the use of offshore investment bonds. And Kevin, I think you've seen this work in practice.
We do. And offshore investment bonds can be quite tax efficient to hold investments in after sale. So there's no ongoing income or capital gains tax liability within that bond. So you get the benefits of that tax deferral. And more widely away from taxes, there are other benefits around having a non-tax constrained portfolio. So investment decisions can be made based on the merit of the underlying investments rather than due to tax considerations. And that there is a constant worry over the tax tail wagging the investment dog. So it does have some wider benefits. And it's not for everyone. It's certainly worth exploring, though. when looking at that post-sale life and what it will look like. And Matt, I think when you were talking there, I heard some magic words, which a lot of clients mentioned to us when going into these discussions as well. And control is a hugely valuable factor.
Hugely.
They like to retain control.
Yeah.
And then the inheritance tax problem as well is a big problem. And those trusts and the investment companies you were talking around there, they really seem to pull in the best of those both worlds to be able to still control assets and to do something about that inheritance tax liability.
Yeah, I mean, control is a real, often a deal breaker with regards to trusts and quite how much control you can still have and still retain the integrity of what you're trying to achieve through structuring with a trust. So, you know, in those conversations, family investment companies can be more appealing to certain clients, depending on their attitudes to the wealth. So yes, definitely a valuable conversation to have. We've touched upon sort of the UK and its sort of global standing for those looking to invest in to the UK and come to the UK, but it's also worth drawing out whether we're seeing trends in clients relocating from the UK, and particularly in the anticipation of business sales. Is this something you've seen yourself, Kevin?
It is something we've seen. And Matt, as we sit here talking on a Friday morning with the sun shining outside, I can't see why anyone would want to leave the UK at this moment. But
I can't.
we're seeing increased queries around relocation. And this is you know, partly tax driven. Because you can extricate yourself from the UK tax net before a sale, potentially, and shield from that UK tax. But there is a bit of a fear of being trapped in different countries, and it's become a little bit less appealing, I think, for clients since rules changed many years ago, and they now have to spend at least 5 years outside of the UK for it to be a successful tax-driven move. But a lot of the discussions we're seeing, it depends on what stage of life the entrepreneur, the business owner is at. And those that are during the wealth creation phase of their life, they're keen to continue that journey and keen to continue being involved in businesses, and they want to stay in the market. So physical location does have a bearing on that. So some of the younger clients are not happy, but willing to take that tax hit to be able to continue to create and generate wealth. But those in the later stages of life, they're more concerned around wealth preservation that we've seen. And this might be their final sale of a business. And that final sale, all being well, is going to be the big one, you know, the one where they generate the most revenue. And they're more inclined to move outside of the UK from our experience. There's a lot of countries they consider. But if an individual has a holiday home in a country, then that can be very attractive to just because it's more of a natural transition from the UK to go live in the holiday home rather than going to live in a completely new country to start a new life. So we've seen, again, it's a bit of a mix. Certainly there's more and more questions around relocating. But the people actually going through with it, the numbers haven't changed too much in our experience. But what are you seeing in that market?
I would agree. I think on your point about using the holiday home as a good stepping stone, which I'd entirely endorse and agree with, what you're finding now, if you take, for example, a holiday home in Spain, and you think, well, Spain's the right place for me, it could well be a case of out of the frying pan into the fire when you think about, you know, wealth taxes, particularly in countries like Spain. You're escaping one taxing regime and could well be implicated in another. So again, it's not without the requirement to seek joined up advice in all the relevant jurisdictions. And I think observationally, a lot of the offshore finance centres are making a play for that sort of lifestyle choice for many individuals who might want a more a lower taxing regime, but also achieving that work-life balance. And I think that's of great appeal as well to individuals. But as you say, it very much depends on where they are in that life cycle and what the next phase looks like, and I know we'll certainly touch on that in our next podcast. So it seems an opportune moment to conclude our thoughts here, really, with regards to the issues we've discussed. Kevin, is there anything you want to sort of add as a closing remark based on the discussions we've had?
I think I'd just like to reiterate that with the planning, it's very important to start this planning early. If you start it late, then you can miss out on opportunities. We've seen this being quite costly for clients. And having that team in place pre-sale, that your lawyer, your tax advisor, your corporate finance house, and understanding what life will look like post-sale, it can really help you to focus your mind. And the sale process is a very busy and involved process as well. So having that spare mental capacity to be able to thinking about life afterwards is difficult. So I suppose in summary, I'd just try and really encourage everyone, get your team in place before you start that process.
Wise words, and I'd certainly echo those comments. Kevin, thank you so much for your time. If you do have any questions you would like to raise, then you can find mine and Kevin's contact details available on our website. Thank you all for listening, and goodbye.
You just listened to the Wedlake Bell Legal Podcast. If you liked our episode and want to know more, then check out our website, www.wedlakebell.com. Wedlake Bell. Building relationships is at the heart of everything we do.